What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Episode 290.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
Oh my God, we made it through 2020.
I mean, almost.
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 Almost. Yeah, as the recording of this is a couple of days before New Year's Eve, but I'm projecting forward to 2021. It is going to be a great year.
I've seen a lot of posts about how uncomfortable people are with the idea that 2021 sounds like 2021.
Yeah.
And it did. I think it beat a lot of
it
us.
It crushed us.
But I think that 2020 Uno is going to be much better, though I'm going to try not to be too enthusiastic about it and test fate. So,
Understood.
It's going to go good.
Sounds fair to me.
Pretty good, I guess.
Last week of the year, we've been inundated with a lot of emails and messages, which we appreciate. Justin wrote this. I'm a lifelong Cleveland native. I was 9 years old in 1986, and I sold a couple of sponsorships for that balloon fest Kat was talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
I vaguely remember the excitement leading up to it. And then I remember we just never spoke of it again.
Now, I also got a message on Twitter from Bruce, I think, and they said that Guinness World Records, they saw something that said that they didn't acknowledge that that was the largest balloon release ever. And from what I read, it was only mentioned in one of the books from like 1998 or something. So hard to say unless we buy them. And probably we should.
Yeah, but if we're going to do that, we need to do it before midnight on Thursday so we can write it off.
Oh, okay. Is that what we're doing? Sometimes I feel like David on Schitt's Creek when I don't entirely understand, like, can I write that off? Question mark.
I
mean, it's for me, the podcast.
It's kind of my mantra this time of year. Can we write that off? You go first today.
Oh, okay. Someone had posted, I think that JG should tell Kat she goes first every time and see how long it takes for her to notice. And I can't argue with that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think that would be outlandish at all. All right. So just a heads up, we do have both pups in the room today. So if there are occasional, hey, stop that's, or what are you doings, then that's what's going on.
Or banjo, don't eat that.
Right. That's the most likely. Jen on Instagram recommended that we look into this topic, and that's Jen with two N's, by the way. Thank you so much. I had a blast reading about this, and I really didn't know much about it. So here we go. The Arabia was a river excursion paddle steamer. Are you familiar with the steamboat Arabia?
No.
No, okay. So the Arabia was 171 feet long. That's about 52 meters. It had two 28-foot paddle wheels, and it had a crew of about 30. It was built in 1853 around Brownsville, Pennsylvania. And when at the peak of speed, she moved about 5 miles an hour going upstream.
Hmm.
The Arabia traveled the Ohio and the Mississippi rivers before it was brought by Captain John Shaw, who operated it, to the Missouri River. In March of 1856, the Arabia was sold to Captain William Terrell and William Boyd. That was the same month, by the way. This is not related to the story, just a fun little side story. That was the same month that the Arabia was stopped and searched by pro-slavery border ruffians.
Border ruffians.
I had to look up what that term meant. They were pro-slavery settlers from the slave state of Missouri who crossed the state border into Kansas Territory to force the acceptance of slavery there. Ruffians interfered in territorial elections and attacked free state settlements.
Is that where we get the term ruffian from?
I guess so.
It's like...
Or maybe it was already a word and they were just referred to as ruffians.
Skulking is a Civil War term. Skulking, soldiers that would abandon their troops before a battle and just kind of hang out and watch things.
They were skulkers.
And then when they'd come back after the battle was fought, those were skulkers.
Yeah, hiding behind trees, poking their little head out.
Skulking about.
Skulking about. Searched the Arabia, and they found a Pennsylvania abolitionist on board who had dropped a letter, and that was discovered and handed over to Captain Shaw. And that letter described that there were guns and cannons en route to the slavery-free Kansas Territory from Massachusetts, and the weapons were discovered aboard the ship.
Oh.
So, yeah. Anyway, unrelated, but just a fun little little tidbit. On September 5th, 1865, the Arabia set out for a routine trip. It was frontier bound, loaded with 200 tons of cargo intended for general stores and homes in 16 towns. Now, the Missouri River is the longest river in the states, and it claimed nearly 400 other steamboats around this time over its 2,500-mile course. The most treacherous of the many hazards in the Missouri was, or Missouri, if you will, were the fallen trees hidden just out of sight under the river's surface. They're called snags, as I imagine they snag you up.
Is that where we got the term snag from?
I don't know. So about 6 miles west of Kansas City at Quandaro Bend near the town of Parkville, Missouri, the Arabia hit one of these snags. The snag ripped open the hull and it rapidly filled with water. The upper decks stayed above water and 150 passengers and crew made it off the boat safely. The only casualty of the incident was a mule that was tied to sawmill equipment and was overlooked while people were getting off the boat. But the boat sank so rapidly into the mud that by the next morning, only the smokestacks and the pilot house remained visible. 200 tons, as I said, of cargo were lost to the muddy river. Numerous salvage attempts failed, and eventually the Arabia was completely covered by water. And due to erosion, over the years, the Missouri River changed course, as rivers sometimes do. And over the years, legends were passed down through families in Kansas City and surrounding towns that the Arabia was located somewhere under their farm. But of course, no one knew for sure where it was. So in 1987, Bob Howley and his sons, Greg and David, set out to find the Arabia. They used old maps and a proton magnetometer. I think I'm putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. I don't know.
Metal detector, basically.
Basically, yes. They figured the missing steamboat must lie about a half mile from where the Missouri now runs, underneath a cornfield. And they thought, according to their figures, that the cornfield belonged to Judge Norman Sorter, who granted permission for the team to see if they could find something in the field. So they took out their metal detectors in 1987, and it didn't take long for them to pinpoint some heavy-duty metal, and it seemed to be boilers. So they began the painstaking task of drilling test hole after test hole after test hole until they were able to kind of mark out the outline of what it was that they had discovered, because they still couldn't be sure what it was. Hawker and his sons teamed up with Jerry Mackey and Dave Luttrell, and the Sorter family agreed that the excavation could take place as long as it was done before spring planting season, because it was their farm.
Yeah.
You know?
Got to get the crops in.
Yeah. So everything needed to be done quickly, and it was obviously winter, and it was not the best conditions, but heavy digging equipment and a crane were brought into the site, as well as 20 irrigation pumps that were installed around the site to lower the water level and to keep the site from flooding as they dug, because they didn't want it to like fill back in with water. The 65-foot deep wells removed 20,000 gallons per minute from the ground. And it took about a year to excavate. So after 132 years, on November 26th, 1988, the Arabia was exposed.
Was it still in one piece?
Not entirely, no. Years of erosion and shifting sand left the paddle boat 45 feet underground.
Wow.
And it was a half mile away from the present channel of the Missouri River. So it took about 4 days after they discovered, you know, the bulk of it to pull up the first artifact. It was a vulcanized Goodyear rubber overshoe. And they were thrilled. Obviously, this was amazing to find. And they started to discover as more things were unearthed that because everything was hidden from the sun and from air in the cold mud, it meant that everything had remained intact. On December 5th, a wooden crate filled with elegant china was unearthed.
Wow.
And the china was in perfect condition.
150 years after the sinking of the ship.
Right.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I can't even keep a set of juice glasses from the 60s in one set. So pretty impressed.
The nicest set that we have, or they have Flintstones characters on them.
The mud was such an effective preserver that the packing straw that was in with this china was still visible. It was still there.
Wow.
Pretty incredible. So 3 years later, the Arabia Steamboat Museum was opened in Kansas City with the tagline, 200 tons of treasure. And they recreated the boat itself so that visitors could kind of step back in time and see what that would have been like. It is thought to be the largest single collection of pre-Civil War artifacts. In fact, their find has been called the King Tut's Tomb of the Missouri River. In the museum, you'll find glass bottles for liquor and ketchup, small mouth bottles for fruits and pies. There were buttons and beads and clothing, weaponry, clay pipes, boots, hats, tools, and children's toys.
Any whiskey? Any bottles of whiskey that were still sealed and drinkable? Because I bet that would be good.
Well, because of the lack of air to spoil the things, thousands of the items that were recovered intact were preserved items and therefore still edible.
Wow.
Reportedly even tested by one of the excavators who ate a pickle from the Arabia, finding it still to be perfectly fresh and edible.
That's amazing.
Yes. So as far, I know there was liquor on board. I don't know about your particular brands, but I'm sure that there were lots of really amazing things that should be seen and will be seen when we go to this museum, because we have to go to this museum. I'm so excited. Oh, my God.
So they've rebuilt the ship, though.
Yes.
And they've put all the stuff back into the ship where they think it may have been. And
well, it's not really. It's a combination of, like, most of the things are just out on display. It's not like you can walk through the ship and see, like, where the... But, I mean, I suppose a certain number of things would be.
Okay.
But that's, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. 200 tons of every kind of item you can imagine, because they were, a large portion of it was to fill general stores. So it had to be like all the things that you would need to stock your homes. Mm. And so there's an incredible number of not just like foods and stuff, but over 4,000 shoes and boots that were in shipping boxes ready to sell. So like crates of items. It's incredible. And the museum is closed on New Year's Day, just in case you were curious.
Okay.
But we absolutely have to go to this. It looks incredible. The Arabia Steamboat Museum in Kansas City. Please, 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 let's go there. I got most of this from Wikipedia, of course, 1856.com, Atlas Obscura, and the Vintage News.
It'd be cool if they could find out what the recipe for those pickles was and recreate them and sell them in their gift shop.
Kind of like the recreated perfume from the Mary Celeste.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You actually got for me.
Lily Bermuda is the name of the company that makes that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It actually smells wonderful.
I love it.
It was a, they reverse engineered that perfume and recreated it. Pretty phenomenal, really. Something that was popular, you know, in the Victorian age.
And now I wear it about Target.
And now, That thing in the middle.
Well, I think we can all agree 2020 was a shit show. It was it was really hard to keep up with all the headlines. Here are some that you may have missed. These are actual headlines from this past year. Number 5, safety meeting ends in accident.
Number 4, woman falls in hospital, told to call ambulance.
Number 3, county to pay $250,000 to advertise lack of funds.
Okay. That's like a low balance fee from your bank. That's not cool. Number 2, woman missing since she got lost.
And number 1, China may be using the sea to hide its submarines. This is the kind of year that we've had. Good riddance.
We can't predict exactly what 2021 will be like, but if it's no better than 2020, we're going to fire off a sternly worded letter to someone. This is The Box of Oddities.
Support for The Box of Oddities is provided in part by listeners like you on Patreon. You can support us too. Go to patreon.com/boxofoddities. Thank you.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
One of the benefits of being a Box of Oddities patron at our Patreon site is you get our home phone number. It's a landline right in our house, and it's available to the inner circle, which is the most sacred of levels.
Shall we say prestigious?
At the Patreon website.
You can just say Patreon. You don't have to say the Patreon site or the Patreon website or Patreon. The Patreon page.
Okay.
It's just Patreon.
I haven't checked the messages for a day or two. Let's check the messages. Let's take a listen.
All right, y'all. I happy holidays. I'm just so wonderful and great. This is horrible. You're wonderful and great, and I love you. My name's Katie. I was the one who sent you a message about Abbott Von Leader on Instagram, and he's amazing and wonderful. But anyway, I was going into Starbucks today and talking to my sister on the phone. She's in the background like a freak of nature. I was talking to my sister on the phone, and you all were playing beforehand. And so as soon as I say bye to her, I hang up the phone, and instead of my phone just being normal and doing what it usually does, it immediately goes back to Jethro saying, well, whales explode for a multitude of reasons. And the woman, Jenna, who I was complimenting her sweatsuit at the time, looked at me as if I had blown the whale up myself. I enjoyed it thoroughly because she laughed with me and it was a good time, but dear Lord, I can only imagine how horribly that would have went. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. I'll talk to you guys on the 14th.
Please always leave us messages like this.
This is wonderful. We enjoy it so much.
I want all these messages.
Yeah. If you'd like to be a Patreon patron on our Patreon patron site, you can do that and get our phone number and call and leave all kinds of messages. And once a month, we open the phones and we just chat with you guys.
That's right. Our next Sunday phone calls with the Freak Fam is happening January 10th.
And I am looking forward to it. All right. 30 years ago, on June 10th, 1990, a BAC-111, which is a passenger jet belonging to British Airways, took off from Birmingham with 81 passengers on board. The captain was 42-year-old Timothy Lancaster. Now, he had put in, at this point, over 11,000 flight hours.
So sorry, real quick. It was flight 111, and he'd put in 11,000 hours?
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd pick up on that.
Interesting.
Yeah. He also had, in the 11,000 hours, 1,075 hours on that particular type of airplane. The co-pilot was 39-year-old Alistair Atchison. Alistair had 7,500 flight hours, with 1,100 of them on the BAC-111. Weird. The aircraft also carried 4 cabin crew passengers, or crew members, and the 81 passengers. Atchison handled a routine takeoff at 8:20 local time. Then he handed the controls over to Lancaster as the plane continued to climb. Now, both pilots at this point were feeling somewhat relaxed, so they loosened their shoulder harnesses, and Lancaster also loosened his lap belt. At 8:33, The plane had climbed to about 17,300 feet over Oxfordshire. The cabin crew began preparing for meal service.
Can I just say that the 17,000 feet, like, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. But I'm not alone. I have somehow wound up on the STEM side of TikTok. And there's a whole thread or a series of TikToks about, you know, very sciencey things that even very sciencey people have a hard time, like, buying. And the theory of flight is one of those things that a lot of people just go like, I don't get it.
I don't understand.
Like, I understand how the air and the wings and the
displacement,
you know, sure, and, all that, fine. Yeah. But still, though, what? It makes me feel better knowing that I'm not the only one who goes, I don't understand. I don't understand how television works.
Air steward Nigel Ogden was entering the cockpit. This is according to Vintage News, when there was a loud bang in the cabin quickly filled with condensation.
Oh, geez.
What had happened was the windshield panel on the left side, which was the pilot side, Lancaster side of the flight deck, separated from the forward fuselage.
Ooh.
Lancaster was immediately sucked out of the airplane, propelled out of his seat by the rushing air from the decompression. It forced him out head first, out over the flight deck. His knees caught on the flight controls, and his upper torso remained outside the aircraft while his knees were holding him to the plane. He was exposed to extreme wind and cold.
Of course.
The autopilot, because his legs caught on the controls, disengaged, causing the plane to descend rapidly, to plummet at about 400 miles an hour. And he's hanging outside the plane.
Now, did our watching Castaway on Christmas Day have anything to do with you selecting this topic?
No, it just came up.
Okay.
It was weird.
Because
I had it in my queue. The flight deck door at this point was blown inward onto the control console. Now, this is the, you know, the door into the cockpit. That blocked the throttle control, which caused the aircraft to gain speed.
No, at the ground.
As it was descending.
No.
Papers, debris, cups flew all over the flight deck from the passenger cabin. Now, Ogden, the cabin steward, rushed to grab Lancaster's belt to try to hold him from flying out completely.
You sweet treasure.
The other two air stewards secured the loose objects and went back and tried to reassure the passengers, which I think would have probably been a challenge because the door had blown open and they were seeing what was going on.
Right.
They instructed them to adopt bracing positions and told them that you can pretty much expect an emergency landing.
Now, how much is a braced position going to help you? If anything, I think you should relax like a stupid baby, you know, and just like all your muscles real soft, just in case.
I think that's probably, there's some wisdom in that, but when you're plummeting toward the ground at 400 miles per hour, to get all loosey-goosey would be a challenge.
It's an exercise in willpower.
Yep. So his legs had disconnected the autopilot, and there they were, plummeting 400 miles per hour down toward the earth with the pilot dangling outside the plane by his feet. Even some items that were bolted down came loose.
Oh, jeez.
Atchison, the co-pilot, had not removed his safety harness. He had taken his shoulder belt off, but not his belt. That kept him from being sucked out.
Yeah.
As well, the plane was not equipped with oxygen for everyone on board.
Oh, sure. Why why would you worry about that?
So Atchison began a rapid emergency descent to reach an altitude with sufficient air pressure. He was able to remove the debris. He was able to find the controls, re-engage the autopilot, and slow the damn thing down.
Okay.
All the while, the pilot... Now, this is how he is, okay? He went out the front of the windshield. His legs were curled around the top of it, helping hold him in along with, you know, the cabin steward who was grabbed onto his ankles and his belt. It was like he was lying on his back up over the top of the plane at 400 miles an hour. And he kept being slammed against the plane because of the wind. His skull kept hitting the plane.
Yeah.
the entire time over and over again, to the point where they looked out the side window and they could see blood running down the window.
I am not surprised that there was blood involved in being half sucked out of an airplane, no. So he was like on the front of a boat, the lady, the wood lady.
Kind of like that, yeah.
But with a plane plummeting toward the ground.
Right.
He lives, right?
We'll get to that.
Okay, because I feel badly being like, ha-ha, wooden boat lady,
right.
Ha-ha, but he lives, right?
At this point, they thought he was dead.
Of course.
Okay, they thought he was probably dead. And members of the crew kept telling Ogden to just let him go. Let go of him. You're suffering from frostbite. Your hands are going numb, and you run the danger of being sucked out as well. He's probably dead. Just let him go. And he refused. He said, no, I'm hanging on to him. He's coming in with us. They broadcast a distress call, but he was unable to hear the response from air traffic control because of all the wind noise.
Sure.
It was very difficult to establish any kind of two-way communication, and that led to a serious delay in the beginning of the emergency procedures. Ogden was still hanging on to Lancaster. He was developing frostbite. He was becoming exhausted. Mm-hmm. That's when Chief Steward John Heward and Air Steward Simon Rogers took over the task, holding on to the captain at this point. By this time, Lancaster had shifted several inches farther outside, and his head was repeatedly striking the side of the fuselage in the wind. The crew, again, they thought he was probably dead, but they weren't going to let him go. The cabin pressure had been equalized. The co-pilot was getting landing instructions. Finally, they got in contact with the airfield. This was at the Southampton Airport. Now, because the aircraft's tank was still full, because they had just taken off, mm-hmm. he requested a long runway because he thought the tires might burst.
Would that be because of the weight of the fuel?
I'm not sure.
The bursting was...
But that would make sense.
I don't know. I don't know anything about planes, as we've discussed.
So Ogden, who had been hanging on to this guy and had just been relieved by two other cabin stewards, now walked up and down the aisle preparing the passengers for this emergency landing. Atchison was finally able to hear the clearance from air traffic control to make an emergency landing at Southampton Airport. I looked for the flight recorder audio. I was not able to find it, but I did find a transcript. This is part of the conversation between Atchison and the flight tower. Speedbird 53190 is 9 miles from touchdown. You are clear to land. The wind indicates 0 to 0 degrees. 14 knots, descend to height 1500 feet, QFE 1017. Roger that, still descending to 1500 feet. Talk me down all the way. I need all the help I can get.
Oh,
we're running on a heading of 02555390. The tower then says, you need not acknowledge any further instructions unless requested. It will be an uninterrupted talk down, but feel free to interrupt if you need to. Emergency facilities or facilities, please, and the ambulance. Everything is available to you.
Oh, I have goosebumps.
You're lining up. You're clear to land. 5390. You are 3 miles from touchdown. The height should be 0 feet on a 3-degree glide path. You were lined up. He has never landed a plane this size, this small a runway.
How can you sleep at a time like this, Banjo?
5390, thank you. I have the runway in sight.
Oh my gosh, he's so polite, even in the midst of
thank you, and you are clear to land. Do you wish to continue with more information? Negative. Roger. Remain on this frequency. 5309. And then he brings the plane in for a perfect landing. Everybody is safe. Now, he has told the tower that he thinks that the pilot is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But Lancaster survived. With frostbite, bruising, shock, and a fracture to his right arm, left thumb, and his right wrist. Ogden dislocated his shoulder and had frostbite on his face with damage to one eye. There were no other injuries.
Jeez Louise. Can you imagine the nightmares that would come after experiencing something like that, I bet every time you close your GD eyes,
yeah,
it's like you're plummeting toward the ground.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So the plane comes in. It taxis to a stop. The air stewards manage to free Lancaster's ankles from the flight controls while still keeping hold of him. At 8:55, the aircraft landed, and they pulled him inside. This all happened in, like, less than an hour.
That's nutso.
Now, the problem, what happened was the plane had gone in for maintenance the day before,
mm-hmm,
and the mechanics had to replace that particular piece of windshield.
Okay.
And they didn't have the right kind of screws to do it. So they found some similar screws that fit, but weren't spec. And so...
That's all it took.
That's all it took. It got up to a certain air pressure and altitude, and the undersized bolts were unable to withstand that, the pressure between inside the cabin and the outside atmosphere, and it blew out. And nobody, of course, expected that. They were unbuckled and whatnot.
Mm.
Investigators found that the shift maintenance manager was responsible for installing the incorrect bolts. And this led to all sorts of new changes in laws and cross-checks so that it wouldn't happen again.
Right.
First Officer Alistair Stewart Atchison and cabin crew members Susan Gibbons and Nigel Ogden were awarded the Queen's Commendation for valuable service in the air. Ogden's name was mistakenly missed from the published supplement. Atchison was awarded the 1992 Polaris Award for his ability and his heroism. The aircraft was repaired and returned to service, and it flew until 2001. Lancaster, the pilot, Tim Lancaster, returned to work after less than 5 months. He retired from British Airways in 2003 and flew with EasyJet until he retired from commercial piloting in 2008. Atchison, on the other hand, he remained flying until he made his last commercial flight on a Boeing 737 on his 65th birthday on June 28th, 2005. So, scary AF. I cannot imagine what was going through the pilot's mind, assuming that he was conscious the entire
Mostly
way.
Mostly it was windscreen.
I just can't imagine. I mean, just being out there to begin with, but then you're pinned against the top of a large passenger jet, and you're obviously injured badly.
Mm.
Your head keeps banging against the fuselage, and then, oh, now we're going to go straight down at 400 miles an hour for a while.
Yeah, and it's not likely that he could hear anything, you know, because of the wind and such. But imagine, like, if he could, it's all like, just let him go. He's already dead. And you're like, no.
I'd be wiggling my toes right? and kicking my feet.
Still here.
Don't let go.
Still here. Yeah, that was incredibly stressful for me, and I just listened to it. So, but then again, we watched Castaway on Christmas, and I had forgotten. I hadn't watched it since it came out.
Yeah,
and I had forgotten what an emotional roller coaster that film was for me. I cried through pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, in a very emotional film. The part that really kind of got me all janked was when they're in the water and he's trying to swim away from the jet engine that's still, it's still screaming and spitting water. And he's, crashing's one thing, but then getting chewed up by a jet engine is something entirely
different. Yeah, it sent my anxiety through the roof all day. I was just like, hypersensitive and just like, what was that?
Anyway, this ended pretty happily.
Yes.
All things considered.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Wonderful story, sweetheart.
Thanks for hanging out with us, you guys. We look forward to seeing you next time. And when we do, it'll be 2021.
And until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you. And its fate is in your hands. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. On Facebook at Facebook.com/Box of Oddities Podcast. On Twitter at Box of Oddities. And Instagram at Box of Oddities Podcast. Come.
Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.